Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're talking about higher education. How are we supposed to pay for it? It's going through the roof right now. Joining me today is Jeffrey Thomas Landward. He is the interim commissioner for Utah System of Higher Education. And also, I have Susan Spears, the CEO of Utah Association of Certified Public Accountants. And UACPA is the sponsor of Money Making Sense. It's always great when Susan comes along. So welcome to the show, everyone.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you.
All right, Jeffrey, we're putting you in the hot seat right now. What's the deal with prices and education? It's all your fault, isn't it?
Yeah, it does feel like it, doesn't it? You know, what's interesting about the question of why is college so expensive? There's a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, the vast majority of the expenses for higher education is the people, you know, the faculty, the staff. And to find highly trained faculty to teach in these complex areas is not inexpensive. And it does cost a lot. And there's not a lot of ways to trim that expense other than, you know, we're always trying to find ways to be more efficient. But which brings me to my other point. And that is when you look nationally at other states in terms of, okay, let's just look at the tuition numbers themselves. How much do students in Utah pay to go to one of our public institutions of higher education versus other states? Utah is in the lowest four states in the nation, or lowest six states in the nation in terms of tuition. When you look at it that way, relatively speaking, Utah is a very good deal when it comes to higher education nationally. Now, I don't say that to suggest that it doesn't hurt the pocketbook to go. It does. It's still expensive. And we recognize that. So we're always looking for ways to try to mitigate the cost of higher education for students. And people are often surprised about how many different types of resources there are to help you afford to be able to go to higher education. One thing that frustrates us more than anything, when we ask people, and we're always trying to find out, why aren't people going to college? You know, what's happening? What we find is one of the most common answers is it's just too expensive. And for a lot of these individuals, if we were to look at their situation and what they could qualify for in terms of financial aid and grants and other things, I think that they would be surprised about how inexpensive it would be for them.
Before we go into those other forms of how we can pay for college, my first question would be, well, really, what's the importance of higher education? I mean, do we really have to go and then worry about how we're going to pay for it?
Well, I mean, it's a fair question. And it's one of my favorite subjects to talk about, which is the why. You know, why go and get a degree or certificate? And we've looked at this recently, actually, because a lot of people ask the question, what's the value proposition for me? You know, if it's so expensive, am I just going to end up working as a barista or something? I think is the most common criticism that we hear. It's like this it's just a little soundbite that people like. And, you know, there are situations where I think people look at what they did and the outcomes and say it didn't really work out. And I think that it's, to be dishonest to say that that doesn't happen, but I think that there are ways to strategically plan your higher education experience to give you the best types of outcomes. Now, let me just give you a couple of ideas as to why it's so important. If you just look at an individual, for example, and a person who has gotten either a certificate, an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, or postgraduate degree. So anything from one of our technical certificates, which we can talk about a little bit more as we go, all the way to postgraduate degrees like a law degree or a doctor or something. The median personal income for someone who has any certificate or degree is double the median personal income of someone who has just the GED or diploma. And then when you multiply that over the course of their lifetime, that's hundreds and thousands of dollars more of income that they generate. But it doesn't just stop at income. And the same holds true for median household income, by the way. That's more than double than those who don't have a college degree or certificate. 65% of people who have a college certificate or degree say they are financially stable compared to 39% who don't. 62% say they can afford childcare compared to 33% who say they can't because they don't have a degree or certificate. Another one that I think is telling, 79% of people who have a certificate or degree have not used food stamps, otherwise known as SNAP or supplemental nutrition, and versus 66% who have not used food stamps. And then here's a really interesting one. I used to work at the Department of Workforce Services in unemployment insurance, so this is one I'm very familiar with. So right now, for example, we're in a very hot economy.
Right.
The employment is very low. So people without a college degree or certificate are finding decent paying jobs. And so, you know, they say, look, I really don't see why I need to go to school. There's a lot of jobs. They're paying well. I'm just going to go out in the job market. And that's totally understandable. And it's true. They are getting decent paying jobs. But here's the thing. When the economy does take a downturn, and it always does, it's always cyclical, people start to lose their jobs. Now, when you have a college degree or certificate, and you go on unemployment insurance because you've lost your job, the amount of time that you remain on unemployment insurance is significantly longer if you don't have a college degree certificate compared to those who do. In other words, you're more likely to find work after you've lost a job if you have a college certificate or degree than when you don't during those tougher economic times. And that, for us, that's one of the most important things, is this is about economic stability over the course of a lifetime. And there's other things like your overall health. Because the health insurance is often associated with employment, you have access to better health care. People report almost 20% more report that they are happy with their lives, that they are healthy, that their marriage is great, that they have children. All of these things are tied back to people who have a college certificate or degree. So it spreads itself throughout all of the aspects of your life. So it's not just about your income. It's about essentially your quality of life. We feel like that's why it's so important.
Susan, I want to turn to you. You had mentioned just before we started this podcast that you've been going to a lot of schools and you're running into kids, I guess students, who are asking some really good questions about the cost and what it means to them in the long run.
It's a lot different now than when I was in school. I think, you know, kids are asking about, well, what's the return on investment? And I think Jeff hit on this, is going to something that, you know, you will be able to get a living from. But I mean, they're looking at, you know, of course, I'm a CPA. I'm on the campuses across the state with our business and accounting programs. And so students within the business schools for sure saying, so what's my ROI, you know, if I'm a CPA, if I'm an accountant, if I'm a finance person, or what if I just completely bag this program and go over and be a different major? You know, they are more cost conscious. They are more looking at the future value of their programs, which I think is really good. And I think that it lends to all the programs that are out there, that oftentimes, another thing that I learn on campuses is that not all our scholarships are being utilized.
I do want to get into that in the next segment, but really quickly, I know for myself, I have a degree in aviation management, and I did work in the aviation field for about 10 years before I switched. And people might go, wow, you have a degree in aviation. What are you doing in broadcasting? But one thing for me when I switched careers, the people that were hiring me at all these different companies, they didn't care what degree I had. They just cared that I had one because it showed I had a commitment. I know how to study, things like that. So that seems to be more important for a lot of people who are hiring, not necessarily what degree you have or certificate, but just the fact that you've done something and you finished it.
From our perspective, that holds very true, and that employers see a value in the credential itself, and not necessarily whether or not you have very specific training. Now, you know, that varies from industry to industry, of course, but in a lot of industries, what they're looking for are a lot of the critical thinking, writing skills, mathematics skills that just come with any bachelor's type of degree or associate's degrees. When you get into the tech college certificates, those get very, very specific, of course. But even then, sometimes we see that just simply having gotten a credential helps open up different career opportunities. And so there is real value. And in fact, that's something that we, I don't want to say debate, but that we do discuss. And that's a question of this. Well, you know, we have a lot of students who go to college, they get some college classes, but then they drop out for whatever reason. There's many reasons. A lot of them are very valid and understandable. So the question is, well, what value does that provide in terms of they have some college at least? Does that help their prospects? It does a little bit, but for the most part, and what employers are looking for is, look, do you have the degree or not? Because for them to be able to quantify, well, you took a couple of college classes. Now they have to ask, well, what were they? You know, what skills does that bring with you versus we know what we're getting with a certificate or a degree. So it's just an easy way for an employer to say, look, we know you're bringing a certain skill set with you, no matter what that was in, and that's what's valuable to them.
We need to take a break. When we come back, I do want to get into how are people paying for their education and what are some of these programs that people might be missing out on. So we'll be right back with Susan Spears, the CEO of UACPA, and Jeff Thomas Landward. He is the interim commissioner for Utah System of Higher Education. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that affects your life in any way money-wise. We're talking about it today. It's higher education and the cost. Joining me today is Jeffrey Thomas Landward. He is the interim commissioner for Utah System of Higher Education, also known as USHE. Kind of like that name. And also we have Susan Spears. She is the CEO of UACPA. Jeff, one of the things that if I do get that degree, and I would say, yeah, I agree, I want to make more money overall. But sometimes I have loans that go on until I am 50 or 60. I am about to retire, and I am still trying to pay off my college from 40 years ago. So I don't think that's helped me that much financially.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's a real issue. The student loan debt crisis is a serious problem in our country. Here in Utah, we recognize it. And so does, frankly, our policymakers. One of the reasons why Utah is so affordable compared to its peer states is because the legislature has invested so much money into helping it keep it affordable for our students, especially our resident students. Now, that being said, students saddled with student loan debt, you know, into the six figures for an undergraduate degree poses serious questions about whether or not they can realize the value of that degree that we've been talking about. And it really does hamper their ability to do that. So we want to make sure that people understand that there are resources available beyond student loans to help you pay for college. And I think that's really critical. The first thing I think is important is to understand that when people hear going to college, I think they automatically think, well, a bachelor's degree or something like that, four-year degree. That is one of the options. It's very valuable, but it's not the only option. You know, our technical colleges, for example, are part of the system of higher education. They are higher education just as much as our four-year degree-granting institutions are. But they're very affordable, and they take a substantially fewer number of months to complete. So, for example, you know, if you wanted to be like a medical assistant or a pharmacy technologist working one of the pharmacies, these are all high demand jobs right now, and they have decent wages, but you can get one of those certificates in a matter of months, and the cost of one of those is about $3,000, and that's without any financial aid. And so, you know, you can do that, and that's a way to keep the cost down if you're interested in just getting into the workforce in an area. We have areas like cybersecurity. Of course, we have our apprenticeship programs in plumbing, electricians. They do quite well. And so I think people shouldn't limit their view of what it means, first of all, to go to college without fully understanding all of the options available to them that are very affordable and can be done very quickly. It doesn't take 4 years to get a lot of these options. So that's one way to look at it. Two is there are substantial amounts of financial aid available that are beyond just student loans. So, and I think we'll probably talk about this a little bit later, but Pell Grants are one of the most common. And Pell Grants are available to a lot of students. They're based on your household income. And I think there's a couple of reasons why people don't take advantage of that. One, they think, well, we wouldn't qualify because, you know, my parents make too much or whatever. In some cases, that's true, but not as many cases as you would think. And then secondly, I think people just have sometimes a distrust of applying for a federal grant. There's a form called the FAFSA, and it's just the standard form that people need to fill out. I know that we'll probably talk about that a little bit later because there's some changes happening there. But yeah, Setting that aside, you have to fill out the FAFSA in order to qualify for Pell Grant. Now, the Pell Grant is over $7,000 a year. That's not a loan. That's simply a grant that you can use for educational expenses, including tuition, fees, books, and other related educational expenses. For a lot of our regional universities and even our research universities, that would cover the cost of your tuition. And you wouldn't need to take a loan out to pay for that. So that's one.
On the Pell Grant, is there a restriction to only using it at a college or university versus a technical school?
Yes and no. So it depends on what you're taking. So there are some restrictions, but for the most part, most people are going to be Pell eligible for most of our programs in the system. So it's definitely worth applying for, regardless if you're going to tech college or you're going to one of our degree granting institutions. There are programs in our tech colleges that are financial aid eligible. And so it would be important to fill it out. The other thing, too, is there are a lot of scholarships. And I think when people hear the word scholarship, they think, well, I have to be an exceptional student in order to qualify. In some cases, yes, but a lot of cases, no, that's not what these scholarships are for. Many of these scholarships are to just simply help defray or to reduce the cost of going to college. There's a few state-funded scholarships that are available to a lot of students. And we have two major ones. One's called the Opportunity Scholarship and one's called the Promise Scholarship. Now, the Opportunity Scholarship is what we call merit-based. In other words, they're looking at your grades and what classes you took. And that's available to all students, regardless of your income and anything like that. We just look at, have you taken a certain amount of courses in certain areas? And did you maintain a grade point average in those areas? But it's not that high of a grade point average when you think about scholarships. The other one is the Promise Scholarship. That's a need-based scholarship. It has nothing to do with your grades. Has everything to do with, like, the Pell Grants. You know, what is your household income? And, you know, and that depends on how many children in your household and everything like that. That money can be built on top of things like the Pell Grant and other scholarships. And so what schools will do is they'll help you apply for all of these different financial aid programs. And in a lot of cases, especially if you're in that Pell eligible range, they will package together all of these different financial resources to the point where there is no cost to you to go to one of our universities or colleges at all. So there's those scholarship opportunities. The institutions themselves offer a lot of scholarship opportunities as well. There are things like work study. Work study is a program where you can work in public service, get payments, but it also helps you remain eligible for financial aid while you're going to school. It's flexible for around your classes and things like that. And that's subsidized for the employers. And so that's another way that you can earn money to help pay for school. So those are just a few of the things that we like to point out to students that, look, just because you think that tuition is unaffordable, it's rare, very, very rare that one of our in-state students will ever pay full price for one of our institutions.
Can you only get the scholarships and Pell Grants through the university or technical school that you're going to? Or is there some big website where you have access to every type of scholarship or grant that's available?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we try to direct all of our high school students to something called Keys to Success. And Keys to Success is essentially an app that's available. High school counselors use this, and high school students oftentimes are required to sign up for this app. This app does a few things. One, it helps you explore different careers and what those careers mean for you and what you need to take or what sort of certificate or degree you would need to earn in order to qualify for those careers. But what it also does is it directs you in a way to all of the different financial aid resources that are available to high school students in particular, in one spot. But honestly, one phone call to any one of our institutions, to their financial aid offices, those financial aid officers will also walk you through all of the different opportunities you have for financial aid. Another thing that we do is we train our high school counselors at all of our high schools to understand the different financial aid opportunities available to students. So they know about the Opportunity Scholarship, for example. They know about the FAFSA. They know about the Promise Scholarship. They know about the different scholarship programs that the institutions offer. So high school counselors will be able to help guide students. We also have in some of our high schools, over 60 high schools, something called college access advisors. College access advisors are recent college graduates who work directly in our high schools with students who are interested in college. They start working with juniors and seniors. The reason why we like this program is because we call these near peers. Because they're recent high school or recent college graduates, you know, they're roughly in their early 20s. And so we find that high school students who are curious about but not certain that they want to go to college relate well to these near peer counselors and feel comfortable asking questions. And these near peer counselors, because they so recently finished their college degree or certificate, that they are able to answer a lot of the questions that are keeping students who are on the fence about going from really exploring it. So we found a lot of success there too. They're also trained in helping students understand what resources are available. So we put a lot of different type of resources out there to help students understand what's available to them. They just need to ask. And we try to make that as easy as possible.
Susan, do you have any input on, especially as an accountant, how getting grants or scholarships, how does that affect someone's taxes, or does it?
Grants, certainly not. A grant is like a gift. You do not need to report that on your tax return or anything like that. A scholarship, you do not need to report. Now, sometimes, as Jeff indicated, I mean, there are different kinds of scholarships. They're GPA-based, they're merit-based. So sometimes, you know, as you're filling those out, you may need to have your household income available. But again, a scholarship is not reportable either. And that's the beauty. My thought process is if you can get a scholarship or a grant and maintain your GPA, that, you know, there's a little bit of a snowball effect there, you know. Scholarship opportunities always open up. I've always kind of felt, and this might sound awful, but I think that there are tons of opportunities to be able to afford that undergrad via the scholarships, the grants, and the awards, so that if you want to go on to graduate school, you can be setting money aside, or maybe at that point in time, that's maybe when some of those student loan challenges come in. So I'll be interested to hear. I'm assuming that might be next section.
Yeah. And speaking of the student loans, how does that affect my taxes? Is that like a mortgage where you can write off interest on your tax returns?
You can write off some of the interest on the face of the return. It's not an itemized deduction, but it's part of the calculation before adjusted gross income. So there is that opportunity. Now, there are some income limitations, if you will. If you make too much income, then that interest expense starts to decrease, and that changes year to year, as you know, depending upon inflation.
This is a good place to take a break, because when we come back, we are going to go into the FAFSA and this change. So we'll be right back with Susan Spears, the CEO of Utah Association of CPAs, and Jeffrey Thomas Landward. He is the Interim Commissioner for Utah System of Higher Education. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, it's paying for your higher education, and that could mean technical school as well as colleges or universities. Joining me today is Jeffrey Thomas Landward. He's the Interim Commissioner for UCHE, and also Susan Spears, the CEO of UACPA. So, Jeffrey, we were talking a bit in the last segment on several ways people can pay for their higher education, but there's one that you can actually start right when you're born.
That's right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's an important one. In Utah, we have one of the best kept secrets actually in the country, and that's My 529, which is Utah's 529 savings program. 529 accounts are accounts that you can start depositing money in for yourself or for your dependents or for really anybody that you want. A lot of people contribute as gifts to friends or grandkids. These are savings accounts that are then invested, kind of like a 401k, but saving for college instead of retirement. There are some tax benefits to that. There are some conditions about how that money needs to be used. Again, these are educational expenses, but that definition is pretty broad. The nice thing is that Utah and My 529 in particular is one of the preeminent of My 529 programs in the country. Thousands of people outside of Utah use Utah's My 529 program because the fees are so low and their performance is exceptional. So they've been awarded the gold standard for My 529 accounts in the nation every year for 10 years in a row now. And it is exceptionally well run. And again, this is a way for you to start saving now, and just a little bit of money each month starts to build on it, like a 401k does, where that compound interest starts to build on itself to the point where if you start early, you'll have a significant amount of savings that are available to help defray that cost, again, of higher education. So that's something we encourage people to start early and to make that just something that you do. But it's never too late to start. You can start a My 529, even if your child's about to go to college in a year, it's still a great time to start a My 529 account just to get some of those benefits from that. So that's another thing that we encourage people to do.
I do want to move on to just today. I saw information about this FAFSA, which we haven't actually explained. It's the Free Application for Federal Student Loans. And there are some delays happening in that this year. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit more about the program? What are the delays? How long is this going to happen? And how does this affect applying?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, right? So this is sort of a good news, bad news type of situation. The good news is the primary reason for the delay is because they've significantly revised the FAFSA form itself. And this FAFSA form, it was a little bit notorious. It's lengthy. It required a lot of time to fill out. There's probably about over 100 questions you had to answer. You had to manually input your tax information. So, you're pulling out your 1020 and trying to take that information and type it into this other one. And it took a lot of time. It was a little bit laborious. And so that was sometimes a barrier for people to even filling out the FAFSA form, just the amount of work it took and the amount of paperwork you had to get from your parents or your parents had to pull up just to fill it out. So the good news is this: they've significantly simplified the FAFSA. So we've gone from over 100 questions down to about 50. The amount of time it takes to fill out is cut drastically. It does automatically import your tax information into the form itself, so you're not having to manually input all of that information. This is great news for students and parents in particular, because it will make it much, much more accessible. The rollout is complicated, and so they've had to put in a delay. Normally, the FAFSA is available October 31st. They've had to delay that to, I think, December 31st is what they're telling us now. And so that puts a little bit of pressure on financial aid offices in particular, because they use the information from the FAFSA to get essentially what is an expected family contribution, or in other words, this is the assessment that they make for your family. I think they've changed the terminology now, but it's essentially saying, well, what is your true ability to pay for college? And that will determine how much you can qualify for federal financial aid. Right now, financial aid offices are probably, they're just having to do, estimates based on the information that you're providing. They can tell you, okay, this is probably what you're going to qualify for. What we're encouraging people to do is, yes, there's a delay, but as soon as it's available on December 31st, fill it out that day if you can, or as close to that day as possible, so that your financial aid offices can start processing that information and start telling you what scholarships and grants you qualify for. Because the sooner you know, the sooner you'll be able to make a decision about where you want to go based on how much you can get from scholarships and grants.
What is the best timeline to apply for the grants and scholarships before I ever start college? I mean, can I do this February before I start my first year?
Some colleges, in fact, for example, like the University of Utah and other of our institutions, they bundle your application for their internal scholarships with your application for admission. So simply filling out the admission form is also making you eligible for the scholarships that they offer at the institution automatically. You don't need to do anything else other than fill out the FAFSA. And so the timeline is people can start applying for college in October before the year before they're going to go to college for the next fall. And that's essentially when you start filling out a lot of these scholarship applications if it's not done automatically. Some of the scholarships require you to take certain courses in high school, so there's a delay timeline there. And so they'll be looking at what courses you're enrolled in for your final semester of high school. So some of those scholarships will be in the spring of next year when you're filling those out. But in short, to your question, the timeline is when you start applying for college the year before, that's when you start applying for financial aid.
And in my case, I was taking AP calculus when we applied for college, and I couldn't hack it. I had to drop out in high school out of my calculus class. So that kind of messed things up a little bit for my entrance.
You know, what's interesting about that, Heather, is AP courses, or what we've referred to as concurrent enrollment courses. You know, these are courses that are actually college courses that are offered in high school. High school students can take those courses. They get college credit as though they are at the college campus, but they're on their high school. In their high school, the thing about that is the cost per credit is $5. That's, you know, drastically less expensive than if you were to take it as a regularly matriculated college student. This is another way to earn college credit at a substantially reduced price, and that will help you earn your degree faster. Yeah. You could go into one of our institutions with almost your whole first year done just from concurrent enrollment courses. So that's another thing to consider.
Yeah, I took AP Biology, AP English, and I was trying for AP Calculus. That didn't work out. But when I got into college, I didn't have to take any of the prerequisite English or biology courses.
That's right. And that saves time. And frankly, that saves money.
Are there any other big things that you want people to understand or know about how they can pay for college if they are just really squeamish about taking out student loans, which I don't blame them. We really don't want to.
Well, and I think that's a really wise approach, is to avoid debt as much as possible. But I will say this, based on the numbers that we talked about earlier in terms of the return on investment for getting a certificate or degree, it is a good investment. And if you need to take out some student loans in order to get across the finish line, that is a better use of that than not doing it at all, because it will pay for itself. I think that the horror stories are people who I think have made unwise decisions about how much debt they take on in order to earn that degree, because there are so many alternative ways to get that certificate or degree and to make it affordable. I think people just need to be more informed about the decisions that they're making. That's one thing I would say is, don't just discount going to college because you don't want to take out any student loans. Just make it a part of a larger approach to how to make it affordable. But get that degree or certificate. That's the first thing I would say, Heather. The second thing I would say is Utah is almost in last place in terms of our filling out the FAFSA. We are the worst performing state when it comes to our students completing that FAFSA form. There are reasons for this, and we don't need to get into it as much as the fact that we're leaving over $42 million a year of Pell-eligible financial aid for students on the table. They're not taking advantage of it because they're not filling out that form. And again, as Susan talked about, this is a grant that's not taxable. You can use it for these educational expenses. It makes college affordable, in a lot of cases completely free. And to not take advantage of that just is. I think really imprudent and also really hard to understand, other than I get that people don't want to fill out the form, or maybe they feel like this is debt that they have to repay. It is a grant, and it is a grant that's funded by our own tax dollars. And so it's available to you for that very purpose. Take advantage of that by filling out that form. Even if you think you don't qualify, you will only know that answer if you fill it out. Don't try to answer it yourself.
I just want to repeat that. There is $42 million a year that is going unclaimed. That's because people are not filling out this FAFSA. It's F as in Frank, A, F as in Frank, S as in Sam, A. FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Loans, that people are not filling out. What happens to that $42 million every year that people aren't using?
Just sits there. You know, it doesn't go to anything. The fact remains that it was money that was made available to Utah students. And when it goes unclaimed, it goes unspent. It's just a shame, because the numbers that we're talking about in terms of that return on investment, doubling your median income over just in a year, because you know you had $7,000 available to you that you didn't use, it seems like a real lost opportunity. It's almost heartbreaking when you think about the benefits of getting that college degree or certificate. So yeah, $42 million from 2022. That's how much we didn't claim that would have been available to students had they just filled out that form. So I implore people, please fill out the form. It's much simpler now. Look, to be frank with you, I think some people just have a healthy mistrust of the federal government in general. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, this is the same type of information you're providing the IRS already in order to file your taxes. So it's not like it's different and new information that they don't already have. This is just a different entity that's looking at it for different reasons. They're pulling that information from the IRS automatically now, so you don't have to fill that out anyway. It's just a form that you need to fill out so that they can take a look at that and say, yes, you do qualify. Here's your grant. So that's the other thing I say is please, please, please fill that out and look at those different financial aid opportunities, the scholarships that we have available that are state funded, federal funded, privately funded. There's so many out there, a lot of times that go unclaimed.
Okay. Any last words, Susan?
I agree wholeheartedly. And to add to your point, Jeff, you know, we're talking about this $42 million. That $42 million, a teeny tiny chunk, if you apply on these FAFSA forms and qualify, you can take this taxpayer money and you're investing in yourself to provide for a better future for you, your family, as you progress throughout life. So I'm looking forward to the simplified forms. I'm glad that they've been done. But everyone, let's get your kids educated and let's move this generation onto a new level.
Thank you so much to my guests, Jeffrey Thomas Landward. You are the Interim Commissioner for Utah System of Higher Education. Can people go to your website to get more information about all of these programs?
They can. Yep, ushi.edu, and we have links there for these programs. Or if you're interested in any of our schools, they're easy to find as well.
Thank you. And Susan Spears, my other guest, she is the CEO of Utah Association of CPAs, also the sponsor of Money Making Sense. And if you have any tax issues, you can definitely go to uacpa.org website to get more information, because maybe you need a little bit of help figuring out taxes if you get student loans.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's H-K-E-L-L-Y at ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.